The fall of Jerusalem to Nebuchadnezzar's army was a disaster in every sense of the word. For more than 2 years, the people of the city endured a siege. The idea behind the siege was that with the expense of a minimal amount of life on the part of the attacking army, you could accomplish the conquest of your enemy. So what the Babylonians did once they surrounded the city was they cut off the city from communications with those outside it, and more importantly, they cut off any means of supply. Well, over time, the supplies of food ran low, and then they ran out. The people, no doubt on very strict rations, continued to hold hope that they would be delivered because their prophets, of which there were many in the city, kept assuring them the city would not fall to the Chaldeans, that they would not lose their homes and be taken away to Babylon. There was one prophet who kept predicting a gloomy end to the siege and the loss of the city, but he was in prison for being a traitor, for encouraging the people to surrender. And the supporters of King Zedekiah could not tolerate those entreaties to surrender. Most people believed that Jeremiah was just a foolish old man, a man who was stuck in the past, a man who would soon be proved to be the traitor that they thought him to be. But then, as they say, a funny thing happened. The Babylonian commander felt that the time had come, and here was the critical point in siege warfare. You had to figure the time when your enemy was at the weakest, and that was the time to launch a final assault. Now, somehow, word of the impending attack got into the city and reached the king and his nobles. And they, instead of rallying the people to fight in this last battle, ran away. They tried to escape the city by a secret entrance. They couldn't get very far, and they didn't. They were arrested. Many of them were put to death. The king witnessed both of his sons being put to death before his eyes were put out. The city's defenses collapsed before the ferocious assault, and the Chaldeans entered the city and began its destruction. Those who were still alive perished by the score at the points of Chaldean swords. And when the dust settled, the city lay in ruins. The Temple of Solomon, in which people had taken such great comfort, was a smoking hulk. And all of its treasures were on their way to Babylon. The walls of the city, some of them dating to King David's reign, were broken down and the gates burned. Most of those who survived those terrifying hours of that final assault learned that their lives would be altered dramatically nonetheless. For just as Jeremiah predicted, the Babylonians would take most of the people away from the city to captivity in Babylon. Now, Nebuchadnezzar wanted to leave some people in the city to protect it from other people who were in the area. And so he left the poorest of the people there. And he released Jeremiah from prison. The prophet remained in Jerusalem under the protection of a Jew who had established a friendship with the Chaldeans. And that was Gedaliah. Gedaliah received the appointment from Nebuchadnezzar to be the governor over the people who were left in the land. He was to be, now that there was no more king in Judah, he was to be the representative of the rule of the Babylonian law. And he was to provide security for the people left behind. But you can imagine that Gedaliah agreeing to take this responsibility would come to be regarded by many of the others as a turncoat. So it was that before very long, he became the target of a conspiracy to assassinate him. And that conspiracy had its source in the desire of the king of the Ammonites. Now we've read that Johanan, the son of Kareah, warned Gedaliah about this conspiracy and urged him to take steps to protect himself. But Gedaliah's response, truly amazing as it is, was that he declined to take any such steps. In fact, he distrusted the man Johanan, and he saw no reason to suspect any danger coming from the king of the Ammonites. And that refusal to believe the words of warning led very shortly to Gedaliah's death and the plunging of the entire remnant people in Jerusalem into consternation. It's a tragic case. It serves as a warning not to despise the message of God. Gedaliah had a bitter harvest of destruction. So in this passage, we find our attention drawn to a very sobering subject, the subject of unbelief's deadly end. Unbelief's deadly end. The issues of the story are very simple. Gedaliah had already benefited to a very large degree from the mercy of God. And in this account received even greater mercy that he refused. And his failure to heed the warning led to his violent death at the very hands of the man of whom Johanan warned him to beware. If Gedaliah had listened to the words of Johanan and all the other captains, he would not have met such a death. And how many times is this pattern repeated? People are warned that death is on their heels, and they think nothing of it. Well, let us observe Gedaliah's solemn example and see the application to the soul. There were three actions that led to his deadly end. Ignoring God's mercy is first. Ignoring God's mercy. The greatest tragedy for this man was that he was surrounded by all these evidences that God was merciful to him. God gave to him deliverance from death. Gedaliah could easily have been killed in the final assault on the city. God gave to him deliverance. We can turn back to chapter 39 in the prophecy. Chapter 39 and verse 8. We read here that the Chaldeans burned the king's house and the houses of the people with fire, and break down the walls of Jerusalem. Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive into Babylon the remnant of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away that fell to him with the rest of the people that remained. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left of the poor of the people which had nothing in the land of Judah, and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time. And among those whose lives were spared and who were not taken to Babylon was this man Gedaliah. So in the midst of the destruction, he and another person, of whom we can also read in chapter 39, received special treatment. If we were to read on there in chapter 39, beginning at verse 11, you would find there that the king of Babylon treated Jeremiah very well. For some reason, he thought that Jeremiah was his ally, because Jeremiah, the king of Babylon knew, had encouraged the people not to resist. But the king knew that he had to protect Jeremiah against those who still resented him for saying those things. And some would even hold Jeremiah to blame for the calamity that had fallen upon the land. Oh yes, you always said this was going to happen. Now it has. It's your fault, Jeremiah. But the other man who received this special treatment, as we have said, was Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan. So the Chaldeans gave to this man the responsibility of governing the city and the responsibility to protect Jeremiah. So here was a man who survived the fall of the city. He remained in the city after many others that he knew went off to Babylon, never to return. And that alone was God's mercy to him. And he should have seen it in that light. So he was going to have greater opportunity now to hear the proclamation of Jeremiah. And he was to have greater responsibility than simply the care of Jeremiah. If you look at chapter 40, where we began to read, but now we're going to read earlier in the chapter, chapter 40 and verse 5. Now while he was not yet gone back, he said, "Go back also to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon hath made governor over the cities of Judah, and dwell with him among the people." He was saying this to Jeremiah, "Or go wheresoever it seemeth convenient unto thee to go." So the captain of the guard gave him victuals and a reward, and let him go. Then went Jeremiah unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people that were left in the land. So Gedaliah was going to be responsible for protecting the safety of Jeremiah and also for the safety of the people. So in a time when most of the people who were left in Jerusalem were living very humbly, you can imagine the city was in ruins. They were having to just scrape out an existence as much as they could. But in that time, the Babylonians promoted this man, Gedaliah, to a place of honor, prestige, comfort. And they let it be known that behind him would be the power of Nebuchadnezzar himself to enforce the laws. So anybody who went against Gedaliah would be going against the king of Babylon. He would have a pleasant life. And that was God's mercy to him. He would have opportunity then to consider the message that Jeremiah preached. There are people who hear the word of God all the time, who have known the mercy of God all the time, and they have the opportunity to listen to the voice of God all the time. Gedaliah was one who had the privilege of hearing God's word. What was it that he heard? Well, if we turn back in Jeremiah to chapter 23, we find a theme that the prophet often struck. Jeremiah 23 and verse 5. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely, and this is his name whereby he shall be called the Lord our righteousness. Jehovah Tzidkenu, the Lord our righteousness. So he preached concerning the advent of Christ, the coming of Messiah. And Gedaliah, as a Jew, would have access to the scriptures. So here he would know that Jeremiah was sent as a prophet to expound the scriptures concerning Christ. But beyond that, he preached concerning another reality, chapter 31. Chapter 31, beginning at verse 31. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was an husband unto them, saith the Lord. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. Here was the preaching of the establishment of a covenant that was entirely on God's side. And Gedaliah had the opportunity to hear those words. But the evidence is, he never cared about them. He never paid any attention to this mercy. He ignored it. And how many times through the centuries have people ignored the evidence of the mercy of God? How many people in this country have ignored the evidence of the mercy of God? Gedaliah did not consider that the fact that he was still alive was the result of God's gift to him. That there was no guarantee that he would continue to live. So he ignored God's mercy. And those who do so always proceed to the next step, detesting God's message. Ignoring God's mercy, detesting God's message. The military commanders who were still left in the land of Judah knew something. They knew that Ishmael, The son of Nethaniah, though he was a Jew, was actually an agent of the kingdom of Ammon. We can read about him in verse 1 of chapter 41. He was of the seed royal. He was a prince of the king. But the warning was, he is an agent of Baalis, the king of Ammon. So that Johanan, the son of Kareah, and others who were with him sought to warn Gedaliah. Now you can imagine, here was the situation. The city has fallen. Only the poorest of the people are left. They have no way to defend themselves. They're depending on Gedaliah to use the authority given him by Nebuchadnezzar. Now here's a plot, because Gedaliah is being portrayed as a turncoat. Now he's turned away from the people of God and the word of God, and he's become an ally of the Babylonians. So they sought to warn Gedaliah. And notice the components of the message that they brought in chapter 40 and verse 14. Dost thou certainly know that Baalis, the king of the Ammonites, hath sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to slay thee? And verse 15, Johanan said, look, give me the authority. I'll go and kill this man. And no one will know anything about it. Why should he kill you? He said to Gedaliah. So that the Jews that are here should be scattered. There was a warning then of imminent death. They were saying to him, your life is on the line. You don't realize it, but your life is on the line. So their message was, there's a plot against you, and the purpose of the plot is to scatter the few Jews who are left who remain in the land. What did the king of Ammon have in mind? Well, during the history that had passed, there were times, going back as far as the reigns of Saul and David, when the king of Ammon lost land. If you were to look on a map now, you would find that the land of the Ammonites corresponds roughly today to what we know as the Kingdom of Jordan. In fact, it's not for nothing that the capital of the Kingdom of Jordan is the city of Ammon. Ammon. The king of the Ammonites saw an opportunity. Well, now everybody's gone. Now there's no one to stop me. And whenever there is the perception of a vacuum in power, someone moves in to fill it. He was going to get back the land that Israel had taken in wars in previous generations. So here the warning came to Gedaliah. Gedaliah, you're about to be killed. They identified who the person was going to be, who was going to do it. And the message was, there's a way out for you. Right now, you give the authority and we will kill this man. But notice the words at the end of verse 14 in chapter 40. Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, believed them not. He detested the message. He didn't believe what they were telling him. And he even accused Johanan of impugning the character of Ishmael. Yet Elias said in verse 16, thou shalt not do this thing, for thou speakest falsely. You're lying. You're assassinating Ishmael's character. And all the time Gedaliah was doing that, Ishmael was refining his conspiracy. So Gedaliah refused to authorize the very thing that would have saved his life. And he paid the price. For that is the third step in the passage, reaping God's judgment. And let us notice how it came about, how deceptive Ishmael was. In chapter 41 and verse 1, these 10 men who were confederate with him in the conspiracy came to Gedaliah to Mizpah, and they had a meal together. No doubt Gedaliah congratulating himself here. I'm glad I didn't take the words of Johanan, because look, here all these people are and they don't show any hostility. Why, they all sat down and had a meal together. But it was his last meal, because Ishmael and those who were with him were waiting for a signal. So here was the appearance of friendship, followed by the reality of betrayal. Then, after the meal, arose Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and the 10 men that were with him. Gedaliah didn't have a chance. The odds were stacked against him. They rose and smote him with the sword and killed him. He said, "You're lying about Ishmael." He said that to Johanan. And it wasn't too much time after that before Gedaliah's body lay on the ground soaked in blood. When you ignore God's mercy, and you detest God's message, you're going to reap God's judgment. That's the point that is being made in this passage. And there was the finality of disaster, because it didn't end with Gedaliah. We read in verse 3 of Jeremiah 41, Ishmael also slew all the Jews that were with him, even with Gedaliah at Mizpah, and the Chaldeans that were found there, and the men of war. He wiped them all out. Anybody left who had some knowledge about how to mount defense was put to the sword. You can go on to read in the aftermath in chapter 41. We're not going to go down through all of those events. But it was a complete disaster. Gedaliah was more focused on the fact that he had been promoted. He was in a place of influence. And this was the best thing that ever happened to him. Instead of being carted off to Babylon, or worse yet, being put to the sword in the city by the Babylonian soldiers, he was now the governor, the royal governor. What a place of status. How would anybody think ill of him? And so when the warning came, he didn't want to think about it. So he said, "You're lying." And then, without warning, without further warning, the blow fell upon him. Can you imagine those last moments when he recognized that what he had been told was so? It was too late. It was too late. He was murdered, put to death, and then many others lost their lives too. So what do we learn from it? We learn from it that we ought to pay attention to the evidence of God's mercy in our lives. We ought to trace the tokens of that mercy in our lives, and from finding that mercy in our lives, then have an ear for that which God is saying to us in His Word, that we not detest it, that we not despise it, that we not say, I'm not going to listen to that word. If only Gedaliah had taken note of the mercy of God, the message of God, he would not have reaped this disaster as the judgment of God. Unbelief. That was the heart of it. He didn't believe. He did not believe what he was told. He was told the truth. He didn't believe it. He paid with his life. Unbelief always brings a deadly end. And the message to the people of God on this night is, believe in your God. There was a time in the previous history of the kingdom of Judah when one of the prophets said to King Jehoshaphat and all the people that were with him, believe your God, so shall ye prosper. So we believe in God's truth. We rest upon God's truth, regardless of how the circumstances appear to us. We rest upon what God has said, and our approach is we're going to continue following after the Lord. Unbelief's deadly end need not be the lot of the people of God. Let us believe the Lord, and so we shall find true spiritual prosperity.